and welcome to The Best Worst Story You've Never Read. I am your host, Cameron Lindsay, and each week I hope you'll join me to hear a story that sucks. A tale that is so terrible, an adventure so awful, that it's great. This week I will be reading part two of a story that we began last week. As always, the author's original writing has been maintained as much as possible. So without further ado, here is Finding Their Masters, Part 2, by Adam Fusco. Chapter 4, A Sad Sight. Mystic woke up first that morning. He took his sword and went outside. Then there was a voice. It sounded neither like a woman nor a man. It sounded like a man and a woman combined. He turned around. There was now one there. Then he looked at his sword. On it there was a small opening. Then opening moved and he heard a poem like he'd never heard before. It went something like this. Over the mountains we go, in a space over yonder, running away from a fear that we made that may give the world a loss. Mystic was stunned. The sword had talked. He hailed for Morlock. Morlock ran over as fast as he could with his sword in his hand. All of the sudden, both swords said we made Radus. Radus was the ruler of Sweden and was a very bad person. I mean thing. It was said that over a million years ago, the great swords made Radus out of Sirio's magic. Suddenly, on the way back to the cave, Morlock said, I'm homesick. Mystic hid it, but he was also quit homesick. I'm going to buy some food, said Morlock.
No, don't. Didn't you see all those wanted shins? Do you remember who was on them?
All of the sudden, the suitcase opened and revealed old man costumes.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. We don't have any money.
At that moment, Morlock's sword made a light as bright as the... Then it dimed down to where they could see there was gold everywhere. Morlock looked at the sword. He was amazed. The sword had outsmarted Mystic.
Come help me get some money.
They packed 9 golden coins, 5 chests, and 3 golden chests. They sneaked out of the park. Once they were in the city and looking around when they finally found a cheap farmer's market. They filled a small bag with 2 stikas. They snuck back in the woods, scurred back to cave as fast as a chidi, yet as quit as a mouse. On the way there, they had a discussion they were going home. Everything was ready when they got back. Even the money was in the suitcase.
Swords, may you take us and our Logage to the village where we came from?
Pleaded Mystic. 1 second later, they were in the village, but the village was all ashes. The only thing that wasn't burnt was their caban. Chapter 5. Truobel in Rumbus.
Take me away from this place,
said Mystic. All of the sudden, they were gone. They reappeared somewhere called Rumbus. They walked into the city slowly, imitating old men. They walked around looking for a motel. They found one right next to a very good restaurant with mouth-watering cannelils. The room they got was fabulous. It had a sofa, 2 bedrooms, and a jacuzzi. They were starved, so they went to the restaurant next door and ordered 2 huge cannolis and went back to the motel. When they got there, Morlock immediately took all his cloths off and got in the juxy. At that moment, two large policemen stepped in and noticed Morlock. 2 seconds later, everything went black. They woke up in a rather small cage. Chapter 6. A Teacher on the Road. Their swords must have been locked up somewhere. They heard Simone scream. A man they seemed to be in his 80s walked through the carrying Morlock and Mystic swords. They sent a blast. There was a crackle. The cage was unlocked. Mystic and Morlock burst out of the cage. The Maserwis man tossed them their swords. All of the sudden, they were twisting violently. 2 seconds later, they were on a road. There was a sign. It said, Relon 1 mile.
Well, I guess we're on our way to Relon then,
said Mystic.
I wouldn't go that way.
Mystic turned around, surprised the old man was still there.
Who are you?
Asked Mystic.
I'm the creator of the swords,
said the old man. God is the creator of the swords, said Morlock.
Who do you think I am? I'm God, and I came here to train you swordsmanship. Pick up your swords.
A sword appeared in God's hand, as if made by the air. He started swinging it violently in their direction. They tried to counter, but the was too strong. Mystic's sword was lifted up in the air and landed about 5 yards away from Mystic. Morlock lunged at God. God dogged and did the same thing that he did to Mystic's. Then he noked him down and put his foot on his neck. Then he put his sword so close to Mystic's neck that he felt blood trickle down his neck.
Not bad for your first time,
complimented God. That was Finding Their Masters, Part 2, by Adam Fusco. And now time for the part of the show where we bring on a special guest to talk about the story that we've just heard. This week we have Emery Booterbaugh, a local stand-up comedian and host of the podcast The Booter. Emery, welcome.
It's the Booterverse.
Oh, the Booterverse. I'm sorry. This week we have Emery Booterbaugh, local stand-up comedian and host of the podcast The Booterverse. Also, a renowned perfectionist. Emery, welcome.
Well, thank you, Cameron. I really like the way you perfectly pronounced my name. That is A-OK, my friend.
It took me lots of practice. First, I was saying things like, when I was just a wee baby. But then after I practiced for many years, I learned to speak normally. And eventually I worked my way up to Emery Booterbaugh.
Well, I'm just glad that you've really sort of codified everything I've believed about myself, that when individuals are born, my name is actually on their lips. So that's great.
Well, it was on a lot of things when I was born.
Well, and a lot of lips too, I would imagine.
Little bit of tongue, I guess.
Well, depending on how you wanted to nurse. I mean, that's up to you, my friend.
Thank you. I don't like to be restricted in the way that I am nursing. Even today.
How's that working out for you? You still on formula, or have you progressed to whole milk?
Well, sometimes I do vitamin D. I don't get in the sun much, so I think it's important to drink vitamin D milk. But I would say, in general, nursing is pretty okay. There's kind of some discrimination against males that are nursing.
It's true. I think we need to go out there with Caitlyn Jenner and say, not only can men be women and women be men, but 30-year-olds can nurse. Nothing wrong with that.
Wow. I wouldn't say flattered that you think that I'm 30.
I'm just trying to make you feel comfortable on your own show.
Thank you. I do feel rather welcome.
That's good. I'm glad I could do that for you.
It's a little warm in here.
It is a bit warm, but, you know, one lives. Survives.
Continues.
Indeed.
Well, what'd you think about the show, Emery?
Well, I tell you what,
the story, I apologize.
I tell you what, those stories are delightful. The author obviously had some psychosomatic issues with the police. I'm glad that God was polite. That's so good, because I always have thought of the Almighty when, of course, he's smiting people as doing it politely.
Yeah, well, I think that, at least in my experience, it's not so much that God has been impolite, but rather he's not been so much concerned with the feelings of others. It's kind of like he does what he wants. But I think in this story, the author really was trying to give him some etiquette. God had obviously knew where to place the fork, so to speak.
Indeed, yeah. He really sort of approached it from a very human sort of perspective. I think a lot of people like to humanize God. I think this was a great attempt at that.
Yeah, slightly sacrilegious perhaps, but...
Listen, it doesn't have to be canon to be good.
This is actually the first time we've spoken about canons on the show.
Well, let's light one on fire and see how big the boom is.
We've got explosions going off here.
Cameron, what you do in the comfort of your own home, that's your business. What's exploding for you might not explode for everyone. Just be cognizant of that.
All right.
And for God's sake, get your walls cleaned. I mean, I don't know. That one poster, it's just, ugh.
I just feel like combustion is a fact of life. It's just something. I was taught to be comfortable with it.
That's good. I'm glad. I mean, I suppose we all should be.
And I mean, that poster is an original from the season one of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I mean...
Listen, who didn't have a crush on the Pink Ranger, let's be honest?
Really? Pink?
Or in your case, green. Or blue, actually. He'd swing your way.
Okay, everyone has a crush on the Green Ranger. Let's be honest here.
Who was also the...
White Ranger.
The White Ranger. Talk about identity crisis.
I really didn't think there was much of a crisis. When your two options are awesome and awesome, it's just kind of like you understand that that's who you are. You are awesome.
Do you ever find the racial undertones with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and the fact that he went from green, sort of sickly, to then white as the ultimate source of power to be a bit interesting?
Yes, but I think for different reasons. Because... I didn't understand the Green Ranger to be sickly. I understood him to be more like plant-based, environmental, perhaps.
Maybe envious, perhaps?
Green with envy, yes. Back to his salad days.
Indeed.
Yeah. So then when he became white, it was like, does he like the snow now?
I mean, did the Green Ranger get gentrified? That's the question.
Well, I think that's a question for the audience. Listening audience, do you think that the Green Ranger was gentrified when he became white? Let us know somehow. I guess they could email us. Comments.
Yeah, what was that email? It was a Gmail, right?
It was a Gmail. lexoutloud@gmail.com.
Well, write in. Have them write in, yeah.
Sure, yeah. Send us mail. I'm not going to give out my address. Send mail to someone and then put it in the care of C/O. Cameron Lindsay, and the best source story you've never read. And it'll probably get to us eventually, if people just keep sending it around.
So, Cameron, is this your... What episode is this for you all?
10. This is our 10th episode. I'm glad you asked.
That's wonderful. I feel great being on that. That's a milestone, my
friend. Yeah. Well, I understand you also have a milestone on your podcast. It's
true. We're coming up on a year, and that is exciting. Almost 50 episodes in the bag.
Hot diggity.
Yeah. I mean, we're just rocking and rolling. Great guests, great advice giving out, wonderful faux news. We're loving it.
Well, I would suggest to all of our listening audience to definitely subscribe to listen to that. I guess they don't have to subscribe.
No, they don't.
They should.
They could. They should, but they don't have to.
No. Oh.
They could go to thebooter.com, listen there. They could go to iTunes.
Listen there.
Indeed. If they want to call me up or my mother, she'll play it through the phone for them.
That's so kind.
She's a gem. Yeah.
Mrs. Booterball.
Oh, wonderful lady. Yeah, wonderful.
Well, what about a game?
I'm up for games. I like games.
Oh, okay, good. Well, we're going to play a game now.
Okay.
By we, I mean you.
I get to play by myself? Or with myself?
I mean, others will be around when you're playing.
Right, okay.
To, like, not necessarily spectate, but just make sure everything's being handled correctly.
Okay, because I don't want people to watch me play just with myself. I think that's a bit...
Yeah,
gauche.
Sure.
But...
Anyway, you're going to take 5 minutes.
I'm going
to
take
them. Play. Yeah, you're going to take 5 minutes to play. And what you're going to do is you're going to write a sequel to the story that we just heard, Finding Their Masters Part 2 by Adam Fusco.
What if I don't want 5 minutes? What if I just want to do it right now? Cameron, let's just do it right now.
Okay.
Let's lock it up.
All right. Well, we're not going to take our 5 minutes.
Let's just get into this.
Okay. Well, all right. Go ahead.
Chapter 7, The Undiscovered Chapter. As God sat at his place, wondering what would be most appropriate when eating humans, he said to himself, "Thank goodness for Mystic and Morlock." He finally found two people that matched his idyllic view of humanity. He sat there and wondered, "How is it possible that I created these policemen?" And thank goodness that Morlock and Mystic were there to beat them to a pulp. It really makes me feel good that the peace and order on this planet is being held in such regard by two scabbard-clad young men who found themselves in a building that collapsed, in a cave, behind bars, all in 6 chapters. But now the rest of their story must begin. I'm going to send them mates, and they shall become married. Poor Mystic and Morlock. The adventure that they have in store is one of pain and misery. But you know, as God said, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Sure, they survived so many things, but marriage just might be their undoing. And that is the way I like to roll. Yes, my friends, God likes to rock and roll. And sometimes he sends rocks, and sometimes he sends those rocks rolling, and sometimes he sends you a mate, not only to procreate, but to sign prenuptial agreements so that you too can find yourself in the same place that Mystic and Morlock will find themselves in 20 years, behind the desk of a courtroom with a lovely attorney that's so high-priced it would make their first mortgage seem like a drop in the piggy bank. Yes, God knew what he was doing, and after all, he said it was good. The end.
Wow, Emery, that...
I just wanted to take it in a good direction. You know, I felt like, let's take fantasy and let's bring that fantasy into reality. You know what I mean? Let's bring those kids back through the wardrobe and into a place where they're going to understand life's not easy.
Yeah. Take them out of the wardrobe, get them in touch with the lion and the witch, so to speak.
Indeed. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that you seem to really hit on the one thing that the author didn't choose to focus on and really draw that out. I would say almost that it seemed like the new author had really instilled something of themselves in it, really taken something that was going on or maybe even difficult for them at the moment and really put it into the story. But who am I to say? I mean, I'm...
No, I've never been married. Cameron, I've never been married. I don't... Yeah, no, I'm good.
Oh, I wasn't talking about the marriage part. I was referring to the fact that God suddenly became the narrator and spoke in the first person.
Oh, you know, Cameron, that's something I do, often putting myself in the shoes of the Almighty. They're a size 10 Ferragamo. And I want you to know that he really knows what's going on. And I felt like taking that character on would be not only a stretch for myself, but a wonderful walk through a paradiso for the audience, yeah.
Mm, especially in such comfortable shoes.
Indeed, indeed. I think people know that Ferragamo takes special concern to make sure his shoes aren't only stylish, but that they're comfortable.
No, most certainly, most certainly. Well, I'm trying to think of other things that I thought were especially nice in your sequel. I think it was very interesting how there was almost a maturing both in the context of the theme of the story, but also in the language. And how it was not mispronounced.
Yeah, I really wanted to show the characters in a new stage in their life. You know, a new time in which they could approach and appropriate new struggles. Still none as hard as fleeing buildings, fighting rogue policemen as one did in a certain Terminator movie. I just thought we needed to take those characters and put them in a new context.
Well, it showed something that powerful magical swords probably couldn't solve, or at least not without intervening of some court sort.
They could, right, but according to human laws, you can't just wield a sword every time you want to solve a problem.
How many times I've been told that.
They tried to tell Conan the Barbarian that, He-Man... even Lion-O.
Oh, God.
But those individuals never listened.
Interesting, though, that Lion-O is required to follow the laws of man, being part cat.
Well, wouldn't you? Because all cats really just do what their humans tell them. That's been my experience.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Even your half-human, half-cat hybrids also follow you?
I do not live on the island of a certain Dr. Mengele, so I don't have any hybrids with me. I am looking at you. You are quite maned, if you will. Not maimed.
I will.
People might get that confused after looking at you.
It's
but
fine.
But no, the mane that you possess, the sort of lion-esque hair, it's wonderful.
Yes. Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. I guess this has made me think of another question. Involving shows, children's shows. I was wondering, so if Lion-O is a half-human, half-cat hybrid, and so is Chitara and the others, what exactly is Snarf?
Well, Snarf actually comes from his own planet, right? We know the history of Snarf.
I do.
Do you?
No.
And so Snarf actually... It's a wonderful story. I can't get into the whole thing here. It's about an hour and a half long. But needless to say, Snarf is sort of embodies a kind of bumbling idiot. But in actuality, he saves the day, as most Snarfs do.
Well, yeah. So I guess then the correct answer would be Snarf is Snarf.
He is a Snarf, yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, it's good to know that then.
It's one of those things like if someone saw you and they called you human.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm not really sure I understand what that example means, but I mean, I'll agree with it because I don't want to seem...
What I'm saying is Snarf is a Snarf.
Oh, a Snarf is a Snarf. And a Smurf is a Smurf.
Exactly right. So it would be like calling Papa Smurf just Smurf.
Oh, I see. Well, I wouldn't want to be rude.
Well, of course not. You want to put that... correct titular head right where it needs to be.
Oh, yes, I do. That's for certain.
Right. No, I mean, Papa Smurf, Mr. Miyagi, etc.
Is Mr. Miyagi a Miyagi or is he a Mr.?
I'm assuming he's a Miyagi because I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, for sure. Do you ever think his legs were swept?
I often wonder about that.
Because he seemed like he knew it was going to happen, like he had had previous experience with leg sweeping.
Right, but you know, I mean, sensei.
Well, yeah, I mean.
What are you going to do?
Sure.
You know, the methods might not be typical, but they are effective.
For sure, for sure.
Do you have a sensei?
I mean, sometimes. I feel like in certain scenarios, I really look to Fred Rogers as a sensei of sorts.
Why aren't you wearing a cardigan right now?
It's too hot. We already talked about that.
I want you to be true to who you are.
But I only use it in certain situations. In other times, I would really say my sensei is more of a grilled cheese sandwich.
Hot.
Oh, yeah.
Melty.
Mm-hmm.
A little brown on the edges.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself a little brown on the edges?
If I've been in the sun for a long time.
Are you...
Or like fallen off a skateboard on a hill.
Sure. Are you like Rachel, our former NAACP friend who... quit, who perhaps self-identifies as an African-American, whose parental lineage is under question, even by herself?
No one has questioned my parental lineage. They've always just accepted that my parents are sandwiches. I guess there was a certain amount of sandwiching required to make me.
When kids came over when you were younger...
Mm.
Did they try to eat your parents? They never did.
No.
You guys weren't the kind of family that invited people over.
I wasn't the kind of person who had friends.
Mm. Wow, that's sad. But as a perfectionist, I had just the right amount of friends.
Sure.
But
you had my friends. If I had wanted friends, they would have actually been yours.
Right. If you had the perfect sort of idea of a friend, I would have had those friends, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Dustin would have been my friend.
Yeah, well, speaking of people who aren't my friend and are my guest friends, Dustin, I hear you have a story of some sort about Dustin, as most our guests have and do.
Yeah, I just have a series of observations.
Oh.
Dustin was very pivotal in my last 15 minutes, and I feel like to let that go unheeded and untalked about would be just a shame. So may I?
No, please. Take it away. Take him away.
Dustin, my bearded friend, ye who has a hat from Brooks Brothers, who doesn't normally denote a Brooks Brother type of individual, says, hey, I'm going to take that. I'm going to wear that. That's going to be me. The bearded, sort of half-fro, not quite curly, but yet bowed. It is a gem of a thing to see. Sort of a dongle with no mustache, but yet he has a lovely lash. I want you to know, Dustin, that we're here for you. We see your T-shirt with the dotted T. We don't know what it might be, but that's okay, because you know, and that's good enough for thee. Now, Dustin is a man who is taller than most. I'm sure if you saw him in the dark, you would say he's probably a ghost. But that's just because he's pale and doesn't see the sun. But that doesn't mean he's lost. No, no, in fact, he's won. Won what, you ask? Well, I have absolutely no idea. Yeah, I've got nothing. I don't know.
No.
Yeah, he's just sitting there.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't mean to...
He's just right there.
Right, he's there. He can even say something if he wants
to. He's not going to do that.
Really?
No, look at him.
Oh, wow.
Hey.
Oh, big surprise there.
He spoke. Now, I've never actually heard him talk, actually.
This is a funny story, actually. So when Dustin was first introduced to me and brought onto the show, because that was when we first met, in some universes, it depends on who you talk to. When we first met and he was brought onto the show, Dustin didn't say a word. He was like Norma from Orange is the New Black, which I hope everyone is caught up on by now. No spoilers, though. Anyway, he wouldn't speak. He could, but he wouldn't. Instead, he would only make ferret noises. That's all he did. So, like, when you wanted to know, like, if he was hungry or, like, if he could meet you later, he would just be like... just like that. I'm afraid that I've started him back up on that track.
Do you kind of find that the ferret is really just a high-priced weasel?
Yes and no. I should say that apparently there is quite a market for cremating weasels and ferrets. So if anyone's interested. Apparently this is actually very big in Ohio. I'm not joking at this point. This is 100% true. Look it up.
I will take your word for it. Ferret-licious, as they say. Where are the ashes spread? What did they do with them?
I didn't go that much into it. I didn't really research any further. Once I saw that there was this information about cremating ferrets and weasels, I kind of ended it there.
Are these, like, pets?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So they don't have a long lifespan.
Right.
So lots of weasel and ferret owners, once they die, will actually freeze them. They will freeze the corpses of their weasels and ferrets so that they can cremate them in mass for a discount.
As one would expect.
Sure. I mean,
from the weasel cremating service.
Sure. I mean,
Cameron, have you thought about going into business?
It should be said that I there are some requirements that I don't meet to be a weasel cremator.
Like what? Can you set an animal on fire? I think you can.
I'm allergic to weasels.
How did you come about this knowledge?
Well, I was trying some various ways of disposing of weasel bodies, because...
Now, these aren't old flames, are they?
No. Wait.
Old flames.
Oh, no. I'm talking about actual weasels. Dead weasels. Oh,
okay.
Ferrets as well.
Excellent.
No, I was trying to find ways to dispose of their bodies because the cremating was so expensive. So drowning, I tried that. Well, I guess burying at sea.
Wow, that seems a bit more costly.
It was, yeah. Well, especially since I don't live near a sea. I was putting them in a lake, and then I was fined large amounts of money for disposing of dead animal bodies.
Hmm.
Apparently it's used as some kind of watershed, some kind of reserve for the city.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, the more you know.
Da, 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 da. Mm. You may have to cut that off or out for recording purposes. I don't want you to get sued by the more you know people. Because they're very litigious. A lot of people don't know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll sue you at the drop of a hat.
Hmm.
The more you know.
Dun, dun, dun. Never mind. Well.
He gave a thumbs down. Is it that bad? That's what he did. He's like this.
No, just against them suing. That's mean. IPs. They're mean.
Well, Emery, thanks for being on our show today.
Wait, that's it?
Do you have something else you want to say?
I can always say more. I'm just, this was quicker. This was.
We've disappointed Emery.
I'm not disappointed. I'm just saying it's.
Look, Emery, I'm sorry that we can't be 100 episodes worth.
It's okay.
We've got 10. That's like a tenth of the way there.
I'm just honored that you would think of me to be your number 10.
Yeah, well, you made the top 10, so way to go.
Well, there.
I'm okay.
There we go.
I'm all
okay.
Right. All right.
Do you need a hug?
No. If I mean it, it's
I'll
your,
give you a hug.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Dustin, be quiet. He'll do what he wants. He'll do what he wants.
It aggravates him more. Just don't do it.
Okay, I'll just sit here, but know that in my heart, I'll just give you a big hug.
Well, thank you. We've got a yogurt machine downstairs. I'll take advantage of that.
Do they have sprinkles?
No. Who puts sprinkles on yogurt?
It's America. We put sprinkles on everything.
If you would like to hear your story read, send us a copy online at lexoutloud@gmail.com. Special thanks to Emery Buderbaugh for being our special guest on this week's show. Special thanks to Adam Fusco for use of his story in this week's show. Our theme music is by Dustin Jones, who also produces the show. This has been a production by Lex Out Loud, a.k.a. LOL, Kentucky's freshest improv team. I am your host, Cameron Lindsay, and this has been The Best Worst Story You've Never Read. Keep the stories coming.